consider it a game, others a passion, sometimes a profession, but definitely a calling. One thing everyone can agree on, tennis is life. Welcome to the podcast that delves into in-depth conversations about every aspect of the sport, reaching beyond the net and outside the court with those who make it their ultimate pursuit. Ready, set, play. This is Tennis is Life. Here are your hosts, Kevin Skinner and Richard Musio.
And welcome. It's time to get into Tennis is Life. And for much of her young adult life and previous, tennis was her life. We're welcoming former world number 35, Cece Bellis, to the program. Hello, Cece.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. And I hope you are too. It's wonderful that you're joining us here from your Central Florida HQ. How are things in the Lake Nona area?
Yeah, good. We're getting some summer weather already, so it's definitely heating up.
Yeah, the humidity kicks in pretty heavy. I don't know about you, but we're both California born, now making our home in Florida, but I never got used to the humidity. I brush my teeth in the morning, I'm a full sweat.
Yeah, I totally understand that. It's so different growing up in California, so I definitely get that.
Well, let's start off with a belated happy birthday to you. Not too long ago, a couple of weeks ago, you celebrated a birthday, and I want to start off with just the idea that birthdays often can be contemplative occasions, introspective. People think about, you know, where they've been, where they're going. As you now reach this next stage in your life and this birthday a couple of weeks ago, what did you come to the conclusions? Anything you set for yourself in saying, I'm going to compartmentalize the past, look forward to the future? What are your thoughts on being 23?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I'm excited to be 23. I think it's, you know, a perfect age to kind of, you know, be finishing up school, transitioning into, you know, a job and everything. So, no, I'm excited. I didn't think too deeply about it. I was up in Charleston commentating for Tennis Channel during my birthday. So I had a ton going on, didn't get to celebrate a ton until I got back home and had a nice dinner with some family and friends. So yeah, nothing too introspective.
Ah, fantastic. Charleston, such a great event, the new stadium as well. You must've been impressed with your time there.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I hadn't seen the new stadium. I played Charleston when I was, I think like 16 or maybe even 15, but hadn't been back since. I always took that week to use it as a training week before heading over to Europe. So yeah, I was really excited to go back. It's always such a fun place and a player favorite for sure. So.
Sure. Well, excellent. All right. Well, here at Tennis is Life, we pride ourselves on the insightful, hard-hitting, really difficult questions to get over. So I'm going to hit you with a tough one. Right from the outset, Cece, when is the occasion and who gets to use it when they call you by your given birth name, Catherine?
Not many people. I think when I was playing tennis, umpires would still use it. And I think in tournament draws, they actually changed it to Cece by the end. So honestly, not that many people. Maybe, you know, family, if they're joking around or anything like that, but nothing, you know, not many people do anymore. So
don't use it in an angry way, right? I know I have a middle name and I never heard my full name unless I was in a lot of trouble. You?
Yeah, not too much. Maybe when I was a bit younger, but now it's more kind of in a joking way sometimes, but yeah, sure. It's more for fun, I think.
Okay. Well, we'll continue with Cece for today, but wanted to touch base on the idea. We mentioned it earlier. You're a California born girl from the NorCal area. SoCal boy myself, but we both make our home in Florida. Going from the Golden State to the Sunshine State, that transition, what has it been for you as far as what you've seen, you know, your maturity level, how you experience life, your outlook? Is there any significant impact in the move from best coast to the east?
You know, I moved when I was, I think 16. So I've been here a while now, and I've really felt like it's a second home for me. I still try and go home back to California. I still call California home. I still go back there, you know, as much as I can. Now that I'm not playing tennis, I've gotten to go back a few more times than per year than I usually would, which is really nice. But yeah, I think I moved so long ago that it was a pretty smooth transition. And when I first moved, obviously I was training full time, and you know, up until last year I was. So it was really solely, you know, kind of here for tennis. And whenever I wasn't traveling, I was here. So, yeah, you know, I think looking at it from a tennis perspective, it was awesome. And I think, you know, it helped my game so much to be out here. But it's always nice to go back. And it's been nice to spend a bit more time there now that I'm not playing. So,
Sure. And of course, referencing for those who are not aware that you grew up in Northern California, the San Francisco Bay Area is ostensibly, but not far in Atherton near Stanford University, which my understanding is you at one time harbored some ideas of wanting to play for the Cardinal.
Yeah. I grew up going to their matches and absolutely loved, being on campus. And there were coaches that, used to hold clinics there, and I used to attend those when I was younger. So absolutely loved it, and ended up actually committing to play there before I turned pro. So had some deep roots there, and, still am in contact with a ton of the girls that, were on the team or currently on the team and the coaches. So yeah, a great relationship with them. And, I was happy for the opportunity to commit, and unfortunately just didn't choose that path.
Sure. And a nationally renowned, both academic university as well as in the sport of tennis for collegiate level, Cardinal have been fantastic over the years. So by skipping, though, and you had good reason, you had a pretty good successful run as a teen. And if we can delve a little bit into your career now, just starting to think about one of the reasons you didn't end up electing to attend Stanford was because you decided to turn pro after some fantastic results. And I say we jump in the time machine just a bit here and go back to 2014. You had won the USTA Junior Girls Championship, which got you a wild card into the US Open at the tender age of 15. Can you talk us through a little bit of what, you talked about watching the Stanford matches, looking up to the girls. You'd seen tennis played at a professional level, and suddenly you're on the biggest stage in all of tennis. Take us back to your thoughts as a young 15-year-old stepping into Flushing Meadows for the first time.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. I had played the Junior US Open previously, so I think that actually helped, my comfort levels, just knowing the site and everything. I'd only played 1 year before that in junior, so I kind of knew the site. It wasn't, like the back of my hand or anything. But yeah, it was nice that I had that under my belt. But it was pretty obviously crazy experience that age, and definitely an enjoyable one that kind of kickstarted my career. I always look back and have fond memories of that. So,
well, I would say so. I mean, you show up 1208 in the world, hadn't beaten anybody inside the top 300, does it? Because you're still in the nascent stage of your career, having gotten in. You found your way up against a very talented Dominika Sibulkova, who, by the way, had just gotten to the championship at the Australian Open earlier in the year. And you found your way to your first ever victory at that level, tour level, and at a major.
Yeah, it was crazy. I think I had only played 2 10,000 pro circuit tournaments before playing the US Open. So I was obviously very early on in my pro career, and hadn't had a ton of experience. So obviously I was the underdog and played very freely, which, was what I was supposed to do at that age and at that ranking and, in that situation. So yeah, I definitely took advantage of that and had a really good time.
Yeah. And you finished up the year, you had been ranked number one, you were the ITF Junior World Champion, a great way to stamp what had already been a terrific breakout, but it puts you under a bit of an intense glare, a bit of spotlight. There's no way to avoid it when you're at one of the four majors and you have a big victory over at the time, 12th ranked Dominika Sibulkova. At the time, were you able to process the idea that there was so much external vision on you and that there was such a heavy spotlight?
Yeah, I think I was, I think the people around me, my family, my close friends around me were so helpful in that time. Cause, like you said, it was definitely a lot to deal with at that age, but yeah, I mean, it was easy because of the people around me, they were able to help me and guide me through that time. And, just focus on kind of my growth and development as a player and a person in general. So I think that was the biggest thing, we focused on, and I definitely kept my college eligibility. I was still, focused on Stanford at that point. So focused on school pretty heavily. So yeah, I wasn't too affected by it, which is good.
It was a pretty heady year. And then things got even more intense pretty early in 2015. I'm thinking to the March 2015 matchup with world number one Serena Williams at the time. That must have been heady stuff to process. One, at a premier event. Two, against arguably the greatest player of the Open era, fellow American. Talk us through some of that as you prepare for that match.
Oh, my gosh. So I was so excited going into it. I was, obviously at that age playing someone you had watched growing up. It was, going to be kind of a dream type day for me. But, I warmed up, I was feeling great. And I get into like the hallway and I see her and I just get so scared. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is actually happening. And yeah, I think I was pretty shell shocked the whole match. I really don't remember a lot of it. It was kind of a blur for me. I was so nervous. I couldn't, you know, even focus on the moment, you know, being in that big of a stadium playing against her. It was very tough because I had never, you know, really been in that moment yet and hadn't played someone. Obviously, I think she was playing some of the best tennis of her career at that point too. So yeah, it was really rough, but such a cool experience. And you know, looking back, it was a great time. I just couldn't really enjoy it in the moment.
Yeah. And that's back when Miami, the Open was played on Key Biscayne. So to your credit, you battled tough through what was not only difficulty in Serena, but it was a very windy day if memory serves. So even Mother Nature was kind of challenging you.
Yeah, there was a lot of challenges there for sure. Not just, you know, my opponent. So it was a big day for me, something I look back on fondly, but something I definitely didn't enjoy in the moment. I was pretty nervous.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't be the first player to have been intimidated by Serena, either on the court or off of it. She is such a presence. But you didn't let that dissuade you. In fact, you had a couple of really notable wins over the course of your career, 3 top 10 victories, including your best against, I believe it was Pliskova, when she was ranked 5th in the world. From the lesson of the Serena match, was there a big takeaway for you and your camp, things that you talked about that really helped you to prepare for the upper echelon?
I think at that moment, I was still so focused on just developing my game, and I knew I probably wasn't going to be in that scenario as, you know, a 15-year-old too much in the next like year or two after that. I was really just focused on kind of coming through the pro circuit tournaments and developing my game. So we took more of like looking at it as an experience and such a cool, you know, moment that I had. But yeah, definitely not taking too much away from it, since, you know, I was not totally there mentally and, you know, was obviously very nervous. So yeah, more just kind of taking away, you know, a fun tournament and a great tournament overall. I had won 2 matches prior to that match. So yeah, just it was a really fun time, but was definitely more focused on kind of developing my game and everything after that.
And develop your game you did. There were the following year, 2016, some notable things. We'll start at the end of the year when you picked up the notable title at the Hawaii Open, which obviously is a feather in your cap, a WTA 125 crown. You enjoyed your time in Honolulu.
I did, yeah. It was the biggest win of my career, so obviously extremely fond memories there. And growing up in California, you know, we used to go to Hawaii on family vacation every year. So I knew a tournament there was going to be, you know, kind of the best matchup for me and the best time. So yeah, it was fantastic. And my favorite tournament that I played for sure.
And then amongst the majors, return to that earlier in the year, back at the U.S. Open 2 years after your big victory over Sibulkova, you made a run to the third round, which was impressive and dynamic and had a lot of people talking. And I guess the perspective now of a couple of years and the ability to look back at it, again, talking about the glare, the intensity, if you could go back and talk to Cece Bellis from 2016, is there any information, any insight you would impart upon her heading into that tournament?
Heading into the U.S. Open. So I was there I was in New York for, I think, almost 4 weeks during that period, because I got there a bit early to train and then came through qualifying, which was a little over a week, about 10 days. And then going to the third round was almost another 2 weeks. So it was definitely a very long period. So I think, you know, what I would have probably told myself was manage my time a bit better with, you know, obviously, you know, at US Open, there's so much press that goes on and so many kind of extracurricular things that some you have to do, some you don't. But I think what I learned from that tournament and also the US Open a couple years prior to that was, you know, just to kind of manage my time better with off-court activities. And yeah, I think just trying to conserve energy as much as possible. But I think, you know, again, that was a really great tournament for me. And I played someone that was playing some of their best tennis, Kerber, in the third round there. So and that was, I think, my 5th or 6th match of the tournament coming from quali. So I was pretty drained, but she was playing unbelievable. And I think that was out of my whole career, I think that was someone that was, besides when I played Serena at Miami, you know, someone that was really at the top of their game.
You're not kidding. I mean, think about what Angelique did that year. She would go on to win the U.S. Open title, one of 3 majors that year, including both hard court majors. So yeah, it wasn't like you lost to a slouch.
No.
I think you bring up a good point, though, about the majors, that your perspective brings to it, is that the idea that a two-week tournament, people think, all right, seven matches over 14 days, you also play qualifying. I mean, there's time for rest, but they don't realize that in between those days of matches, there's press obligations. You became the darling of certainly American tennis coverage on the networks and the scribes that were there. It's a heavy load to carry. It's not just focused on tennis and what's done on the court.
Yeah, no, there's a ton off the court. I think people don't really get how much time you spend in press after matches, especially if, you know, at that time I was pretty, you know, in the spotlight, I guess, for being, you know, that young and playing in tournaments like that. So I was definitely obligated to a lot of hours doing press afterwards. So that was, I think, the toughest part. The US Open a couple years prior, even more than that. I think after both matches that I played when I was 15, there was, I mean, definitely after my first round, I think there was like 8 hours or 9 hours of press afterwards, which, you know, is most of it's mandatory. There are a few things that I didn't know that you can actually say no to, but I just, you know, was too young at the time to understand. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of extracurriculars for sure.
And last thing on this, as we look back at that, I mean, obviously so much attention garnered by you because of your success as a teen and early stage of your career. From the perspective you have now, a few years removed, how do you feel about the age limit, or if there should be one, about introducing 15, 16-year-olds to what is now just an intense glare, social media, television networks, all that? What are your thoughts on if there should be an age restriction for younger players?
Yeah, you know, so I believe it's 14 now. And oh my gosh, I can't imagine a 14-year-old being in a crazy predicament like that. Obviously, you know, I think when I was 15 playing in the US Open, I was so like underdeveloped physically compared to the other girls too, let alone mentally and game wise and everything. So I think, you know, it's crazy how much of a tax it is, like playing matches day in and day out physically at that age compared to playing junior tournaments when, you know, usually have somewhat easier matches than pro level grand slams. So I don't know. I don't know if they would ever implement something like that, because there are so many good young players. I think it would be, you know, tough for, you know, the WTA or slams to not allow them to play. But yeah, I mean, definitely development wise, I think it would be nice for them to not have to, you know, deal with all of that until they're a bit older.
Well, we did say this is a two-part phase to our conversation. It's not just the past, it's the future as well, which you are obviously bright and thoughtful about, because you've got your life ahead of you now. But you did mention at the start of this year that it was time to hang up your racket after a difficult number of years, sometimes traumatic, experiencing a lot of injuries and the rehabilitation and then trying to get back to the elite level that you were at. I guess in looking at the last couple of years, COVID aside, which affected everybody and had such a detrimental effect in so many ways, what over the last couple of years have you taken away as a young woman now that you've learned about yourself in dealing with that adversity that's going to help you move forward?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of patience for sure during that time. And I feel like, you know, going through that as an athlete, as a person, is always going to make you stronger, no matter, you know, what field you're in, what sport you're in, if it's, you know, something similar at work or anything like that. I think going through something that, you know, is kind of that stops, you know, what career you're in or you know, just kind of your, what you love to do or anything like that, I think is definitely tough. But I would 100% say that it made me stronger overall. And, you know, I'm so grateful for the time that I had playing on the tour. And I only look at it, you know, with rose colored glasses and a positive, you know, lens. But yeah, it was definitely just time for me to move on. I knew that I'd been in that kind of same cycle for so long that mentally I was ready to kind of move on. And obviously my body physically was telling me it was ready to move on too. So yeah, I mean, I only have positive, you know, kind of thoughts about tennis and views about it. And, you know, my excitement and joy about it is still here, and I still can go out and play for fun every once in a while, but I'm definitely glad and kind of relieved in a way that I don't have to kind of go through that anymore. So.
Well, the other aspect to your career that is a terrific finishing touch was when you got to a final at ITF or WTA level events, you were a closer, an 8-1 record overall, including that Hawaii Open biggest title at the WTA 125. I mean, you were a competitive player who could handle her business well on the court.
Yeah, I mean, I loved it. I think, you know, you can ask anyone and they'll say that, you know, if I trained with them or worked with them, they'll tell you how much I love the game and how excited I was every day to be out on the practice court or in, you know, in matches, things like that, competing. So yeah, I think a lot of that record was probably from, you know, just kind of joy and how excited I was to be there and kind of, you know, my hard work paying off, I guess, in those moments. So, yeah.
Well, you mentioned positivity and you also talk about how things are now transitioning. Let's take it to where things are going now for CC 2.0. What are your interests? What are your intentions? What are you thinking about as you go into this next phase?
Yeah, so I'm actually graduating in 2 weeks from Indiana University. The partnership with the WTA, I, you know, committed to Stanford and ended up not being able to go. So I knew I still wanted to complete my degree. So, you know, immediately when I heard the WTA partnered with IU, I enrolled myself and got involved. So, yeah, I've been doing that the last 4 years, graduating in 2 weeks. I've been working in venture capital for the last year as an investment analyst. I'm really loving it. And growing up in kind of Silicon Valley area, I knew it's something I wanted to get into when I was done with tennis, whether that was, you know, after Stanford or whatever time in my life. But yeah, it was an easy transition, smooth transition, which was nice. And yeah, I'm planning to get my MBA, start business school either this fall or next spring, depending on if I feel I need a break or not from school.
And school, speaking of which, how were your grades? Were you C or above?
I was, yeah. I think I'll finish with a 395. So
perfect. Then I believe the WTA kicks in 75% of the tuition. So well done. Yeah. Using your financial acumen to your advantage. Speaking of financial acumen, Women's History Month back in March, and you were involved in something in Miami for the economic empowerment of women, a bunch of American players, Bethany Maddox-Sands, Jessica Pegula, I believe Taylor Townsend and Christina McHale as well. Tell us a little bit about your involvement with that and what the takeaway was.
Yeah, it was great. So it was actually how I was involved was the company that ran it, Break the Love, is one of our portfolio companies at the firm I'm working for. And I'm actually on their advisory board as well. So you know, a lot of ties to that company, and I have a great relationship with the founder. We're really good friends, and she asked me to come down and be a speaker at the event with the other girls who are some of my best friends. It was incredible to see them, and yeah, just really fun to be a part of something like that for a great cause.
That's fantastic, and good to see players of your note, yourself and the others, being able to impart some knowledge to the people who went. Speaking of imparting knowledge, we asked you earlier about the idea of what you could have told yourself as a teenager and perspective and almost like a mentor position. You were involved with the WTA mentorship program yourself, weren't you? And I think you had a very esteemed person in your corner in that regard.
Yeah, so I think it was actually it was through the USTA when I was a part of it when I was younger, and Chris Everett was my mentor. So it was absolutely fantastic, and you know, definitely I think I spoke to her like 2-3 times a week for a few years, starting from when I was 15 or 16. So it was awesome. I absolutely love it. I still talk to Chris every once in a while, and yeah, it was just such a cool experience.
Well, you'll be happy to know she feels the same way about you. Had a chance to ask her yesterday about her thoughts on you and what she thought of you. She said, first and foremost, one of the most positive people that I've ever met. Said she'll be successful at anything she does. She'll go out and do what she wants to accomplish. She's that girl. So that's pretty high praise from an 18-time major champion.
Yeah, she's the best. When the USTA was down in Boca, I used to, you know, be able to work with her a ton because she was, you know, we shared the facilities with the Everett Academy. So she was on my court a lot and worked with my coach down there a ton. So she was also kind of in a advisory coaching role for a bit too, which was fantastic, obviously having her perspective. So yeah, I got super close with her, and unfortunately I haven't seen her in a while since I stopped playing, but still keep in touch with her, which is great.
Well, she speaks highly of you, so I would think that would be a very happy feather in your cap, so to speak.
Definitely.
To know Chris Everett thinks of you so highly. So, all right. Well, you mentioned in Charleston you did some commentary. You and I happened to do some commentary at the collegiate level a couple of years back. That was my honor indeed. But is this something also that you want to pursue? Are you looking forward to maybe doing more of that down the road and becoming
a
profession?
Yeah, I definitely am, for sure. Yeah. So I think this year I'll do probably 8 to 10 weeks or so with Tennis Channel in a broadcasting / commentating role, kind of depending on, you know, tournament, things like that. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to doing that on the side as well.
All right. So we're going to get close to wrapping this up, but we can't let you get away then, because now you're going to be a pundit. You're going to have to speak about friends and foes. You're going to have to be honest and give your assessment and breakdown. But let's ask you a couple of questions about the current state of the women's game in particular, and start off with your thoughts. Not long after you decided to retire, so did the world number one, Ashley Barty. What are your thoughts on Miss Ash?
I think it's a great move from her. Honestly, the way to go out is when you're on top, like she did. I think there are some players that have dragged it out way too long and have kind of tarnished their legacy a bit by playing and losing to players they should have never lost to, you know, at the top of their game. So, yeah, I definitely love what she did. And I think, you know, the pandemic was really tough on her and a lot of Australians because they couldn't go home for a year or two. I mean, I would have never wanted to play during that time either. So I know that took a mental toll on a lot of the Aussie athletes. So I definitely understand why she did what she did. And I think it's really cool that she went out at the top of her game.
And very few that work harder than Ashley or worked harder going on the court. But I think something to take away from both of you is she's also leaving with still not just a passion for the game, but appreciation. You talk about you're not angry and harboring ill will, the fact that injuries sideline your career. And she's decided, I'm going to walk away now before any burnout starts to kick in.
100%. Yeah, I think that's, you know, the best time to walk out. And I think I definitely did at the same time, too. And yeah, I mean, there's such an appreciation for tennis in my eyes, I'm sure, you know, obviously for her as well. Definitely different levels, never got near where she was, but, it's such a great sport and I still love it. I still love to play for fun. So I'm definitely gonna continue doing that for the rest of my life.
Well, you can both lay claim to being number one. You did so as a junior. She did
yes.
so as at the top of the WTA, but we'll leave it there for Ashley. As far as the current state of the game, though, a lot of parity in the women's game. It's really creating an exciting atmosphere. There's no dominant player at the moment. What are your thoughts on the current state and how you see it progressing over the next couple months, maybe even years?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, there's so much going on. There's so much depth in women's tennis right now. Like you said, there's not one. I'd say if there's one person, Iga is probably, you know, kind of dominating right now. But yeah, I think that's the beauty of tennis. And we're just going to see that even more as, you know, months and years go on. You'll see how, you know, younger players are coming up and kind of taking over. But also, you know, kind of the vets still in the game and continuing their dominance. So I think that's what the beauty of women's tennis and the depth that we have right now, which is so incredible. So I think that's what makes it interesting. I think even more interesting than sometimes watching men's, because you really never know what's going to happen.
Well, your acumen and intelligence about the game, I'm going to put you on the spot here now, because as we know, a rule was released by all four majors recently to say that the decisive set, there will be a tiebreak played at the end. There will be resolution at some point. If you were the commissioner at the tender age of 23 of tennis, if there was such a position, is there any specific rule, something that you would look to make your mark on immediately?
Ooh, interesting. I do like the tiebreak rule. I think that's important to do that. In third sets, no one wants to play those out. I don't know. I think that's something I would definitely have to think more about. And, you know, there's obviously, I'm sure, things that would come to mind immediately if I thought about it for a minute. But, yeah, I think that was the best first move to kind of initiate those tie breaks in the third.
Well, there is no commissioner in tennis at the moment, so you got some time to think about it. If it ever does come up, your nomination would probably be supported. But CeCe, it's been a pleasure. Really had an enjoyable time chatting with you. Thanks for joining us and making sure that we got your insight and some thoughts. We're looking forward to hearing from you down the road and your commentary position.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. It was a great time.
All right. And we've enjoyed it. We hope to have you back. And don't forget, CeCe, tennis is life.
Love it. Tennis is life.
Game, set, match. Another winner by Kevin Skinner and Richard Musio. Thanks for listening to Tennis is Life, the number one podcast for all things tennis. Catch you on the court next time.